Yeah, thank you so much, guys. Thank you. So is it weird that I cheered for myself when he said give it up? That's kind of awkward. So I'm going to try not to be selfish and all those good things. So, hey, I just gauged the room. I want to do a little survey before we get started. And I share a little bit more about my story and whatnot. How many of you chose to be here because you wanted to be here? Just give me a... All right, good, good, good. That's more than I expected. Okay, good. All right, now, how many of you are here because you had to come with someone else? Just be honest. It's fine. All right, good. Thank you for your honesty. Some of y'all told me already that's true, and you're not raising your hand. What's up? Okay, so look, I don't believe in accidents, so I would just invite you to have open ears to see maybe what God might speak into you as well, even though you're here to support someone else. It's all good. It's all good, okay? And so as Fox said, my name is Billy Newell. I do serve as a senior pastor at Trinity Lutheran in Bloomington, Illinois. It is the pit stop to somewhere else. Just in case you're wondering, it's halfway between St. Louis and Chicago, right in the middle of the state of Illinois. I did grow up in Houston. We call ourselves Houstonians, which is a really weird word. So it's fine. It's been a long time, though, so I am sweating just as much as you guys. This is not normal heat. And so we're going to get going to tell you a little bit more about me. I am a follower of Jesus. That may seem obvious, but I like to put it at the front because it's like the best thing about me. Everything else is kind of plan B. And I'm married to Kristen Newell. She's actually now Dr. Kristen Newell. So everybody give her a whoop whoop. Yeah, man, it's hard work. I watched that and I was like, I don't think I'll ever do that. Okay, so anyway, I was so proud of her when she finished that last year. She was a doctor of education, and we have four kiddos, Josiah, Addison, Naomi, and Evelyn. Yes, we are always tired. And there's a few things that I love to do. I love bike riding. I play Minecraft. Yes. Yeah, that's right. I still play Minecraft. Someone took a picture of the axolotl in Kima. So if you go to Kima, you can take a picture of a real axolotl. Anyway, okay, so, and then sharing Jesus is a love of mine. It's because Jesus did stuff for me, and I just want to give it away, okay? That's what motivates me, is to give you an idea. And I love to see my kids achieve things. So to give you an idea of what they look like, all right, this is us. Okay, yeah, look, oh, and we're rocking the Be Like Jesus shirts. Those are from Zach Zender, who was there last night, okay? Yeah, my son is Josiah. Addison's just below him. Naomi's even down there. And then because Evelyn's a terror at 3 years old, we have to hold her, you know, like you're going to be in this picture. So that's us. But we're not always like that. Like sometimes we look like this. Okay, we're in the Black Hills. Anybody? This is the Badlands for my South Dakota people. Okay. Yeah, there's six of them right there. And they're from where my wife is from in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. And we love hiking and doing some adventurous stuff. What you don't know is like right past that is a deathly drop that we are freaking out about, okay? And we sometimes look like this. So we are real. And funny thing is when we tell my son to make a funny face, he looks like a normal smile. So I'm not sure what's up with that. And so everyone is trying to figure out how to handle the Houston heat. Since I am from here, I'm staying with my parents. They're part of this story. And they live about 45 minutes northwest of here in Spring. And this is how we handle the heat, okay? We just get in the pool in the backyard. And that is not a cute picture of me. So we'll move on. All right, so. So, you know, we're here to talk about addiction, and most of this is going to be shared through testimony, through a little bit of the story of how addiction has impacts of my family and my life. I will try to share a little bit, just a little bit about, like, what is happening that makes addiction a thing in our minds, in our bodies, because that all plays a part in that. Okay, so if I was going to teeter around sounding smarter than I am, I would tell you, any kind of addiction, particularly earlier in age, begins to mess with what's called the limbic system. Everybody say limbic system. And that's about as much as I know about the limbic system. No, I'm just kidding. So it's the pleasure sensor. It helps to kind of manage and maintain your responses to any kind of emotional, sensory-oriented thing, okay? All of those are the different parts. Your prefrontal cortex is a part of this whole adventure as well, and your brain, which is like wisdom. It gives you the ability to pause and think things through. It's still developing. Just in case you're wondering, my wife would say mine is too, okay? But we're trying to figure that out. And so because I am not smart enough to really explain all that, I've decided that I'm going to tell you how this addiction thing works based off of something you use all the time. Anybody have some earbuds or headphones? So you got them with you right now, okay? So here's what happens with anything that is prone to become an addictive thing for you in your life. It could be drugs, it could be alcohol, it could be phones, gaming, it could be a person, it could all kinds of things, right? We can make an addiction out of just about anything, okay? What happens is it's like the volume is turned up just a little bit. The pleasure sensor receives something that tells you you should be happy, and you receive it a lot over time. What happens is that initial volume, it's not quite as loud as it used to be. So when it's not quite as loud as it used to be, what do you do with the volume? You turn it up, right? You turn it up because, you know, hey, you're trying to enjoy this stuff. You want to hear the details again and all the music and the words and everything. And so you're just rocking it. And then what happens is sometimes other things begin to infiltrate, right? So now we have awesome headphones that have what feature? Noise cancellation, right? It's so fantastic when you're driving 16 hours in the car with four children in the back. Sorry, that was the other day. Having flashbacks. So we have noise cancellation headphones, which I think is a powerful illustration, because over time, as you consume a substance that makes you feel happy over and over and over and over and over again, it begins to cancel out all of the other things in your life that give you normal amounts of pleasure. Like a simple smile from someone else. Like, that gives you pleasure. It does. Okay, and so then your limbic system kicks in and you're like, all right, cool, I love that. I want to see more of that. Okay, but when you start to use other things too repeatedly over and over and over and over again, provide a shot of pleasure, your brain is reworking your pleasure sensor. And it's going, I rehearsed that in a car. So right now, y'all are all like, man, I need noise cancellation now. Right now, to us, that sounds like absurd loud. It's crazy, right? Because that's not where we start. We start with a whisper. And the whisper repeats. Y'all know what it's like to be in your lunchroom at school. You talk a little bit louder, and everybody else talks a little bit louder. You talk a little bit louder, you talk a little bit louder, 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 louder. And all of a sudden, everybody's at a roar, and whoever's the monitor is like, y'all got a thing? You know, a teacher's like, boom. Yeah, that it.
Oh, I'm so proud of you.
Okay. My wife would be proud. Okay. So, yeah. So, eventually, maybe we realize, man, this is too loud. I don't know how to turn it off anymore. Because everything else, like, I can't hear it anymore. Okay. This is an illustration to help you kind of see how addiction can work in our minds and our bodies. Okay. There's way more complicated ways to describe it actually, physiologically, okay, psychologically, but that gives you an idea of what is happening internally in our bodies. And so eventually, you become numb to the normal interactions. And you're just trying to figure out how to get more and more of that thing that is loud enough for you to feel pleasure again, okay? And it starts to destroy everything, because no one else in your life, nothing else in your life gives you that sense of happiness and joy like that thing now, because it's too quiet. And over time, what has to happen is you have to, for a long, long time, reprogram your whole being to appreciate those things again. Okay, that's called recovery. All right, so here's a addiction by the numbers, okay? So here we go. This is going to maybe surprise you, maybe not. 50% of teenagers have misused drugs at least once. Okay? So, hey, this half, y'all are like, why'd you pick this side? No. I mean, look around. 50% of all teenagers, by the time they get to their senior year in high school, have already misused illegal drugs. Okay? What's the number one choice? Yeah, I love that because y'all are like, oh, I'm going to say, I mean, marijuana first. All right, so we're smoking weed. Okay. Smoking weed. That is what the most common one is. Okay, so then next, what we got? 61.5%. That's to show you, it's a real stat I found. Okay, 61.5% of teens abused alcohol by 12th grade. Okay, so drugs is 50%. Alcohol is 61.5% is higher. What's the drinking age? Okay, just saying. All right, here's the thing. That's also illegal. Okay, so I'm just saying. Okay, I'm just saying. I said it. All right, so then what we got? 25.6%. What do you think this number is? Where am I going to go? What age do you think I'm going to talk about? All right, you're getting closer. Yeah, good. 8th graders, 25.6, 1 in every 4 8th graders have already drank alcohol. What? Saying it, yeah, we got to say it out loud, right? These are real numbers. These are real things. This is as of 2021, right? This year, a fourth of all 8th graders already have already drank. Okay. No, it doesn't. Communion. Y'all crack me up. Yeah. Confirmation stats are in there when you get confirmed. Yeah. That was good. I like it. I'm going with it. I'm gonna try to plan that in the next one. All right. Okay. So now we got to keep rolling. But, all right. So a fourth of abused alcohol, I should say, that is actually in the stats. So that, thank you for that clarification. It's not just a sip of communion wine. It's legit. Like, they got drunk in 8th grade. All right. Okay, I did that. So I'm not surprised by that stat. But maybe some of you are. And that's an awareness piece that needs to be out there. All right, so here you go. 9 out of every 10 people with addiction started using substances before they turned what age? All right, so you see why all those other stats were there. The earlier you start abusing substances or anything, okay, the earlier you start abusing the use of something to the point of abuse and addiction, the more likely it is you're going to suffer from this addiction for the rest of your life. All right? So this is just facts, okay? Now, I know facts don't always motivate us, but we got to say it, all right? So I'm saying it. Every year, these stats change slightly. I'll celebrate something. In the last year, as of 12th graders, okay, up to 12th grade, the use of illicit drugs has actually gone down by a few percentage points. Thank you, COVID. Hey, that's right. Yeah, I love it. So if you pay attention to the stat, what does that mean? Y'all just weren't getting together and partying this past couple years. I'm just kidding. I'm serious, though. All right. So how does this come home for me? All right, so addiction in my family. My story starts back whenever I was where I was born. But anyway, a little before after that, two years old, my biological father, who I call my Y daddy because that's what he gave me, and then he was gone, Y chromosome. Okay, so he gave me that. And then by the time I was 2, he started using drugs and alcohol, which was a new addition to his life at the time. And he was really mean and violent. And so one time he was choking my mom, and for whatever reason the phone kept ringing off the hook, and it annoyed him enough to where he finally went to go get it. And while he was on the phone with his sister faking it, my mom got me and left. Okay, so because of drug and alcohol abuse at the time, my biological father was out of the picture. He left. Turns out he moved back to Florida, where he was from. And I never knew him, okay? So that's my first father figure, the one that was supposed to be real. Drugs and alcohol kind of compromised him being a part of my life. All right, and so then next, you have a second father figure. His name was Bill Grissom, awesome, down-to-earth dude. We'd go fishing and hunting, like learn all kinds of outdoorsy stuff from Bill, learn how to do a little two-step from Bill, okay? Good, like, He's straight Texas, okay? Now, whatever you have in your head for that, just think Bill, okay? And that's fine, all right? Over time, he and my mom liked to go out dancing and everything, but he would binge drink and go too far. And he wasn't violent, but he was prone to give in to temptation then. And so he cheated on my mom. And so after 5.5, 6 years of father figure Bill, that relationship was broken because of the abuse of alcohol and no more. So Bill, who at the time, I mean, he's who I knew as a dad, okay, gone. And not totally gone, but not able to be a part of our lives, okay? And he'll come back around later in the story, but okay. So then, after not that long, actually, my mom, who's holding down the fort, single mom in it, you know, she was a manager of apartment complexes, just trying to raise me and my brother at the time, you know, a hot mess of things going on. She rekindled a relationship with Phil. She's got something to do with, my dad's name is Bill, and there was Bill Grissom. She switched to Phil. So I don't know if that was an attempt to do something different, but Phil, turns out, they dated way back when. And the reason that didn't last was because he went to prison. Why did he go to prison? Because he was using drugs at the time. And he would do things like sell things that didn't exist or sell things that weren't his. So, for example, one small part of the story was that he actually sold a boat because someone was watching, going down the pier, he watched him. He saw him looking at a for sale sign on a boat. He said, hey, can I give you a tour? I'd love to sell the boat to you. And he did. Okay, so people don't like that, turns out, when you sell them a boat that isn't yours. Okay, so that was kind of some of the early on things that separated a relationship. It got back to better. He was in recovery. He had his own business. Okay, we were living on NASA Road 1. Y'all didn't go to Kema, did you? Anybody go to Kema? All right, y'all probably went on NASA Road 1. Okay, anyway, so that's Clear Lake down there. NASA Road 1, we go to Kema, and you see the bay opening up there. We'd go in the speedboat and everything, have a bunch of fun. It was awesome. We loved being down there. That was home, okay? We lived on the third story of a condominium in Clear Lake. And my mom and Phil got married, and so he became my stepdad. And after 2 short years of that marriage, he relapsed. And his drug of choice was quite expensive, if I could say it that way, without sharing too much of his story. That's his story to tell. And so he went back to those patterns of selling things that didn't exist. And since he had a company, he could sell a lot of things that didn't exist, at least for a while. And eventually, where did that land him? Back in prison. Okay. And so by that time, I was like in fifth grade, okay? And so by fifth grade, I've had 3 father figures that drug and alcohol abuse impacted their ability to be dependable, be reliable. And so they could not be a part of our lives consistently. Now, this was all I ever knew. And as the story progressed and my mom wrestled with those kinds of things, she began to also wrestle with alcohol abuse. My brother is a drug addict and alcoholic. So like stats would say that if you have a person in your household that you grew up with that is exhibiting addiction, you know, patterns of addiction, that you're 3 times more likely to do the same later on in your life. I don't know if there's a multiplier, okay? Because I've got 3 father figures, a mom and a brother, who I grew up with, who were all struggling with addictions of various kinds. These, of course, limited to drug and alcohol abuse. There are many others. And so for a long, long time, this is all I ever knew. I was used to people not being dependable. I was used to people just kind of serving their own selfish desires, and I'm just figuring out how to survive. So I generally would lean heavily into sports and community, but all I ever knew was these things were okay. And so I myself also began to teeter around with smoking weed. By what grade? 7th grade. Yeah. And for me, I don't know why I had this deal where whenever I was playing sports in season, I wouldn't do it. I guess I wanted to breathe. I don't know. And I don't know why I thought that, like, hey, I can just turn it off because I got a game, you know, and we got a season, so in the season. But that maybe kept me for a while from building up a dependency early on, okay? Now, I want to say already that, like, we've been talking about drugs and alcohol, but I hope you already heard me say that addiction can be pretty much anything. If we're going to tie this then back to our faith journey, you could say, in a very general sense, that we are all actually addicted, okay? Maybe not in the definition, the strictest definition of real addictions that people are dealing with in their everyday life, but all of us wrestle with this church and east thing that we call sin. Amen? Yeah, I don't want to say that one real loud, did you? It's not an exciting amen. Okay, and all sin is addiction to self, okay? Like, we are so addicted to ourselves that we would put ourselves before God. And that's sin, okay? And the things that we choose to do when we're living out our addiction to self is just pleasure, right? We just want a little more pleasure, a little more pleasure. And sometimes we take something so far that that becomes a dependency and an addiction, okay? So I guess I would ask you, if you're being open and honest, not having to say it out loud, like, what's your thing? For some of you, it may be real, and it may be hard. And you may be naming smoking weed. You may be naming drinking already. You may be naming heroin. You may be opioids, prescription medication you steal from grandma and grandpa. I mean, you name it. Maybe it's, as some have shared, digital-oriented. Maybe it's gaming. You just isolate. A lot of different things. Maybe it's a person that you're so dependent upon that they're owning you right now. It's like, what's your thing? And what kind of destruction is it causing in your life? For me, I witness the destruction of my family. It's been a long time since I've been able to speak with my brother, who's continuing to struggle in his addiction. It could be the destruction of friendships. There's all kinds of things that start to happen when we're choosing something over the people in our lives and over God. It's like, what's your thing? No matter how serious it may be. And just say it, whether it's in your mind, you mark it down somewhere so you're owning it. Like, this is my struggle. Yeah. No matter what your struggle is, nobody is too far gone. Amen? I did that bad speaker thing where I forgot to bring my Bible out. I'm so sorry. Nobody is too far gone. And so Jesus told a story. You maybe have heard it. I call it the story of the prodigal because we sometimes identify only one part of one person in the story of the prodigal, but there's prodigal all over this story, okay? And Jesus tells a story of a couple of sons and a father, and he is describing the kingdom of God, okay? This is a parable, just so you know. It's a parable. So Jesus is trying to teach about how God works. He says, there's a man with two sons, and the younger son says, Father, I want my inheritance. And if you haven't heard it already, you need to hear it now, that in the context of this parable, that means he told his father he's as good as dead to him. And what does he want to do? He wants to get his money and go live his life his own way. Okay? What's his addiction so far? Himself. Okay? And it starts there, right? So what's he do? He takes the inheritance and he goes and he travels to a far-off land, okay? And in that far-off land, he begins to do all kinds of things that waste away the money. They waste away the things that the father gave to him. He's partying, he's drinking, he's having inappropriate relationships with women, okay? He's squandering it all away, and it says recklessly, prodigally, you might say. And he gets so low that he runs out of money and he tries to find a job, and it's a terrible job. He's a Jew who's taking care of pigs. Y'all know that's not good, right? Like, Jews don't touch pigs. They're unclean animals to them. And he's keeping them alive. It's so low for him. And while he's in this low state, he's looking at what he's feeding the pigs, which I don't know if you've seen, like, what pigs eat. Not good. Not good. And he's like, oh, that looks so good. And he has this realization. He says, I'm not worthy to be my father's son anymore, but you know who at least has food is his servants, his workers. And so he's at this moment where he's just like, I'm at the lowest of the lows that I can be, and I know I don't deserve to go back and have what I had before, but I at least need to go eat. He's like, I got to go back. And so he journeys back, and he's rehearsing what he's going to say, right? Y'all remember you're in Luke chapter 15? Sorry, it's in the dark over here. I'm getting there. My baby Bible. That's a bad form. I should have got a bigger Bible. Okay, there you go. When he came to himself, is in verse 17, when he came to himself, when he came to his senses, he said, how many of my father's hired servants have more to eat, but I perish here with hunger? I will arise and go to my father, and I will say to him, he's rehearsing, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me as one of your hired servants, right? This is identity talk, right? I'm not a son anymore. I've given that up. I'm just a worker. And he arose and he came to his father, but while he was still, what? A long way off. While he was still a long way off, what was the father doing? Yeah. If he's going to notice his son a long way off, what did he have to be doing? He's looking, man. He's watching. He's looking out there. He's, my son is a long way off, and I want my son to be restored. I want my son to be alive again. I want my son to be a part of the family. I want my son to regain all of the inheritance that have been squandered. So I'm going to look for him, and I see him. And it says before he ever could finish his speech that what the father do but go and embrace him. And he's hollering out, put the ring on his finger. That's a restoration of identity. You're not going to be a servant. You're my son. And what does he do? You don't have clothes. Put a robe on him. He's royalty. You don't have sandals for your feet. Put the sandals on the feet. And then he says, kill the fattened calf. Y'all, in Texas, we say we're going to have a barbecue. Okay? We're going to have a barbecue. We got a party. Because my son was dead, and now what is he? He's alive again. Y'all, this is what the Father wants. Now, just in case you're wondering to yourself, like, look, I've never been that far off. Like, my story's not that extreme. I don't have drugs and alcohol in my story. We got to keep going because there's more prodigal going on in this story to teach us about the Father. So anyway, he did all this, and the Father, he tried to say, I've sinned. The Father does all these things. Like, he restores him. He says, you're my son. By the way, the Father running out was the first moment of sacrifice. Because this was a village mentality. And what would happen if someone was cast out of the village, if someone was no longer deemed to be a son of the master of the village, of the patriarch of the village, the chief, you might say, they try to come back in town. Guess what? Everybody else, before he ever makes it to the father, what are they going to do? I mean, they're trolling him. I mean, they're hackling him. They might even go out there and beat him. So what does the father do? He runs out there and he takes upon himself the shame. He says, I take your shame because I don't want you to have to live through that. I'm going to take it on me. That's the way he does. He goes and meets his son where he is, and he takes away all of the shame and the guilt. Okay, so now he's partying. He's partying because he got the fattened calf out. Everybody's in there. He's got the ring. He's got the robe. He's got the sandals. Okay, and the host is the father. He's mingling because that's what the host does. The host is mingling with all the people in the village, all the family, you know, kids everywhere. except for one kid, because he's been doing what he's supposed to do. He's doing all the right things. Where's the older son? Some of y'all know the story. Come on. He's out working the field. He's fattening up the rest of the calves out there. Like, he's doing work. He doesn't even know there's a party until he's coming home from work. He's hearing all the noise. Like, what's going on? Oh, your brother's back. He was throwing a party. And what does it say about him? I'll wait. Yeah. It says he was angry even. He was angry. And he starts pissing a fit. He's got resentment in his own heart. He's like, I've been doing everything you always said to do. I've been here the whole time. I never left. I always took care of the work. And you never even, what do you say, like fattened a goat. You never gave me a goat to have a party with my friends. I mean, he sounds like a child, doesn't he? Like, I didn't get to have a party with my friends, Dad. And what's he doing this? He's doing this outside. He won't come in. What does the father do? He takes on the shame. Because y'all, I don't know if you know, but as a parent, it's embarrassing to have to go out to your bratty kid outside pitching a fit. None of y'all are those bratty kids. I know. That's why I can say that. Okay, y'all ain't never been that, so that's why I can say that. But it's a hit to your pride as a parent. You feel like you haven't done a good enough job. You know people are talking smack when you leave the house. Can you believe Pastor Billy's daughter is doing that again? You know, as Evelyn, just so you know. She's 3, okay? He takes on the shame again for the older son too. No matter how severe the grievance against the father, he takes on the shame and he goes out and he talks to him. He says, look, don't be mad. Your brother, he was lost. He was dead. But now he's alive. We had to celebrate. So you see the heart of the father? It's to celebrate those being restored back into the family. Those experiencing healing. Those experiencing a restoration of identity. Okay, now I'm going to show you something. That's my title, by the way. I should put that at the first one. Pastor, because hardcore devil-stomping ninja isn't an official job title, okay? All right, that's why it's there. I almost ripped my pants doing that. This is what I put on the website, okay? Because people won't come to church if I do that. Maybe they would, actually, if I do the other one. I share this with you because I want you to understand that addiction, sometimes they go unnoticed. For a long time, my story has been to point to other people's addictions. And you right now are the first gathering crowd, at least, that I'm going to tell you that on that day, I spent, this was the evening, this was a dinner at a conference for large church pastors. That's right. And all day I threw up in the hotel room. I walked around from shade tree to shade tree over there trying to be a little bit alone so that I didn't throw up again. And then just because, you know, you want everybody to know it, everything's good. No big deal. I'm good. I can do a ninja karate kick. I can smile and have a great professional picture for a website. It may not be great. I just said that. But it was a problem. And I didn't do anything about it at that point. I flew home, used this picture happily to share, and I finally got one I can share with people. Look like a senior pastor now. Yeah. But I was beginning to exhibit signs that drinking's getting out of hand. I didn't stop right there, okay? So what happened? I actually needed to have another couple of experiences that finally just I couldn't ignore it anymore. Okay, so what happened one Saturday? I was mowing the lawn, working in the yard. This was last year, September 18th. And I had alcohol. I thought I had a margarita mix. It turned out it was vodka that was flavored like lime. Yeah. And I threw up most of the night. You know what comes on Sunday morning? Church. And when you still feel like you're kind of drunk on Sunday morning, preaching, you're not your best. When your son is listening to you throw up in the bathroom, you're not modeling a good life for him. When your daughter sees all the beer cans that you're crushing and she says, "Dad, you got a real drink-a-tight." She's the creative one in the family, so that was her way of saying appetite with drinks. And I realized, look, I just broke two big rules for me. My drinking has now impacted my family and my role as a pastor. And so on September 19th, which is not even a year yet, I realized I got to quit drinking. And I don't know. You know, I wrestle. People will ask me, "Well, how long are you going to do that?" And I say, "Well, I don't have a date for as long as it's a problem." And it still is. And so I had to do the hardest thing ever because these things affect everyone. That evening, I sat down at the dinner table and I told my kids, "I'm sorry. I have not been modeling for you the life that I should live and show you. I've been showing you the opposite, actually, of what I want you to do. And so Dad is making a commitment not to drink anymore." And they all were super supportive. They're 10 and 8 and 6. And Evelyn doesn't even know what's going on, and you know, except for that she owns the world. And my wife, super supportive. I knew, okay, now I got to start doing some things. I got to start expanding the circle, okay? And because I already said a couple things, I skipped, you know, I got to move that slide next time, don't I? You know, it's out of order, I tell you. Where is God in this? To say it again. For the younger son, he arose and came to his father. While he was still a long way off, he ran to him. For the younger son, I mean, the older son, the younger son, he did the same thing, and this is what he's doing. Like, you think that if someone thinks that you have a drinking problem or you have a drug problem or you have a texting, sexting, you know, any kind of problem, if you got a gaming problem where you have an inappropriate relationship with your device because you spend more time with your device than you do the people that love you, like all these things, if you got a problem, like, that's not who you are. There is a key thing that I do not say. I do not say that my name is Billy and I am an alcoholic or an addict. I don't say that. It's not because I don't struggle with abusing alcohol. I do. It's because this is who I am. I'm a child of God. I'm a redeemed son of the creator of the universe, of the one true king. And so that's the identity that God restores for us as we deal with the struggles of sin in various degrees in our life. And what does he do? He says, "I want to give you a place to belong. I want to restore you to community." And that's where the good stuff happens, y'all, because it's the community that's going to support you through the struggle. Like, people that you know love you to death. And they'll go to war with you. And they'll remind you of who you are. Not an addiction. That's your struggle. But it reminds you of who you are as a redeemed child of God. That God would love you so much that he would give it all away for you. And to give you a purpose. Now, there's so many people that I know, because I could, by the grace of God, be honest about the struggles in my family and in my own life. That God's chosen to do something with that. And it's different. Every time it's different. But to be able to say to someone, "Man, look, this addiction, it doesn't have to be the end of the story. For you or your loved one, It does not have to be. The destruction that you experience does not have to be the end of your story. The brokenness does not have to be the end of your story. Because we have a God who restores, who puts things back together. We have a God who reconciles people towards himself. And that's the purpose that God can give to you, even in the midst of brokenness, to redeem something and to use you and your story to impact the world. Let's go to our gathering theme passage, part of it at least. I want you to see with your own eyes. Colossians chapter 1, beginning at verse 21. And you, who were once alienated and hostile, you might say you were once a long way away. You were far off. You, doing evil deeds, he has now reconciled in his body of flesh by his death in order to present you holy and blameless and above reproach before him. There's so much happening there, but it would say that God would take your place and would die for you and would sacrifice for you so that he could bring you back home. He would take on your shame and your guilt so that you could come close to him again, that nothing would be so big that it would separate you from the love of God that is in Christ Jesus. Like, he's bringing you back. And then he's going to use you to bring others back too. It's so powerful. It's amazing. And if you feel like you're not worthy and that you're broken, dirty even, how does he present you? Holy, set apart, blameless, and above reproach. These are amazing things that the God of the universe has for you and for your loved ones in powerful ways. So I should tell you a little bit of an update. Bill Grissom actually was a big part of my life when I was in middle school and my mom was struggling with her addiction. We didn't have a place to live. And he was in a healthier place living in recovery. And Bill said, hey, Billy can come and stay with me and my son. And so for half of my eighth grade year, I lived with Bill Grissom, who was in a healthier place in life by the grace of God at that time. Bill has since passed away. One of the hardest phone calls that I have ever received. I didn't even expect it. And it was powerful because he knew the grace of God. He knew the love of Jesus Christ in his life, and he knows and is experiencing what it's like to go before God holy and blameless and above reproach. And he just used his healthy seasons in his life to give everything away and to serve other people and love on them. It was a powerful thing that I got to receive that from somebody during a pretty difficult time in our life. Phil, he's my stepdad. He's the guy I call dad at this point in my life. He did spend 5.5 years in prison. He got out of prison, sober. Kind of difficult to do drugs in jail. Okay, you can. It's harder. Okay. All right. But during that time, he is sober. He got out. And within a year, y'all, this is only God stuff. Within a year, we moved from an apartment to a house. First off, it was the first miracle that he and my mom said, hey, we're going to try. She had not been waiting for him, and he did not expect that either. And yet, they said, let's try. And so God reconciled that relationship, and so he started a new business. It is now one of the largest hotel liquidation businesses in the world. It's insane. He's a convict. Okay, that's God's stuff right there. He made a promise to me through letters whenever I was going through high school. He made a promise that I will help pay for your college. How are you going to do that? Yeah, you don't make a lot of money in prison. I don't know if you knew that. He helped pay my college. That's not because he's awesome. I mean, he's kind of awesome, but I mean, God did a thing. And so even now, that picture I showed you with the pool in the backyard, that's his house. He and my mom living in recovery and just trying to make it through challenges in life. Okay? And I say those things because I want you to see that the story isn't just the bad. The story is really about God continuing to be present in all of those things and doing his work every single day, oftentimes through really, really unexpected ways. And so what do we get to do? Have eyes wide open to Jesus, to Christ, being in all things, even addiction.